intervention. The first genocidal act committed by Israel is the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, in violation of Article 2A of the Genocide Convention.
It's an application that's split into two sections. One is the intent to commit genocide, and the second bit deals here with the actual acts of genocide. And many of international legal scholars and others have indicated that it's very difficult for Israel to effectively answer to these cases without having to concede that their actions are indeed in violation of the Geneva Convention.
To be collectively punished, all constitute genocide and show proof of intent. Evidence submitted by South Africa says acts and omissions by Israel are genocidal in character because they are intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial, and ethnic group. This refers both to what Israel is actively doing, such as carrying out airstrikes, and what it is failing to do, such as preventing harm to civilians.
Gaza, which is one of the most densely populated places in the world, is home to approximately 2.3 million Palestinians, almost half of them children. For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea.
The suit also lists the blockade on food and the destruction of essential health services for pregnant women and babies as measures by Tel Aviv intended to bring about their destruction as a group. The Organization of Islamic Countries, the Arab League, Iran, Bolivia, Colombia, and Brazil, and a number of other countries have also supported South Africa's decision to file the case against Israel. Iran has urged international bodies and agencies, including the UN Security Council, to adopt immediate and practical steps aimed at complete cessation of Israeli military strikes in Gaza.
For people of my age, we were brought up in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, and to see them leading the charge against Israel was really poignant. So there's a lot riding on this. Obviously, the lives and well-being of people in Gaza first and foremost, but international law itself is on trial here, and I think the court has to know that.
A separate case is continuing at the International Criminal Court. Both courts are located in The Hague, Netherlands. While the purpose of the ICJ is to resolve conflicts between political regimes, the ICC prosecutes individuals for committing crimes.
This could be a turning point. This could be a moment where the world rises up in one voice and says in very emphatic terms that is supposed to embody justice and equality and the rule of law, that these actions by Israel amounts to genocide, torture, and something that we have not witnessed, I think, really in the history of mankind.
Under international law, genocide is defined as committing one or more acts with the intention to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group.
There is also the clear pattern of conduct, the targeting of family homes and civilian infrastructure, laying waste to vast areas of Gaza, and the bombing, shelling, and sniping of men, women, and children where they stand, the destruction of the health infrastructure, and lack of access to humanitarian assistance.
The gruesome scenes of death and destruction in Gaza are a reminder that for Israel, violence is not incidental, accidental, or coincidental. It is part and parcel of its colonial policies. For decades, Israel has used disproportionate force and has carried out countless massacres against Palestinian civilians as a form of revenge and punishment. Most of Gaza's 2.3 million people have also been displaced since October 7, with aid agencies warning of famine risk amid mounting hunger. The 365 square kilometer territory.
Israel's conduct has been deliberately calculated to cause widespread hunger, dehydration, and starvation. Israel's campaign has pushed Gazans to the brink of famine. An unprecedented 93% of the population in Gaza is facing crisis levels of hunger. But removing the ability to distribute it through constant
has already been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. Recent UN General Assembly votes show that most of the international community is appalled by Israel's brutalization of Gaza, yet appears unable to act. Throughout the past decades, Israel has controlled the Palestinian territories in part to colonize them through hundreds of illegal settlements on stolen Palestinian lands, in part to hold their population hostage until their leaders accept its political dictates. The Israeli oppression of Palestinians had already witnessed a sharp rise under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist coalition cabinet, which is composed of far-right Zionist parties that oppose Palestinian statehood and support the expansion of settlements in the occupied lands. Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
All 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe, it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean, so children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, Flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and Silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
Since the start of its genocide in Gaza, Israel has imposed a comprehensive blockade on the Strip and prevented supplies of food, water, fuel, and other humanitarian necessities from reaching the more than 2.3 million residents of the Strip. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon has intensified since October 7 and has included cutting off all food supplies to Gazans, as well as bombing and destroying the Strip's bakeries, factories, food stores.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount.
About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people.
Speeches and statements from Israeli officials promoting a campaign to deliberately block access to necessary resources for the Gaza population as a strategy indicate that Israel has not made these intentions a secret. The Israeli blockade, on top of the genocidal aggression, has plunged Gaza into humanitarian catastrophe, where lack of access to sanitation and safe water has increased the prevalence of waterborne diseases. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court says that intentionally starving civilians by, quote, depriving them of objects indispensable to their survival, including willfully impeding relief supplies, is a war crime.
The people in the hospitals, yes, they need everything. They need medical supplies, but what they ask for first is food and water, the very basics. They do not have them. One of my colleagues described people lying on the floor in severe pain, in agony, but they weren't asking for pain relief, they were asking for water.
The plight of Gaza's 2.3 million people has become desperate amid the war. Around 80% of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip have been displaced by the violence, while efforts to get aid into the territory have struggled. Alarmed humanitarian organizations have been calling for a ceasefire and denouncing the shocking cost of the catastrophic war, which amounts to a collective punishment of the civilian population of Gaza.
We are homeless. We can't go back to our houses. I want to see my children. I want to go back to my husband and to my house. It's unfair. It's so unfair.
The World Health Organization has once again sounded the alarm on deepening humanitarian and medical crisis in war-torn Gaza. It has called on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing Palestinians in the besieged territory. According to the latest WHO assessments, Gaza has 13 partially functioning hospitals, 2 minimally functioning ones, and 21 that are not functioning at all.
There are actually no functional hospitals left in the north. Al-Ahli was the last one, but is now minimal functional. And still treating patients but not admitting new ones, along with Al-Shifa, Al-Ada, and Al-Sahaba Hospital. So these hospitals are still sheltering also thousands of displaced people. At Al-Ahli, about 10 staff, all junior doctors and nurses, continue to provide basic first aid, pain management, as much as possible, wound care, and trauma stabilization services.
The Nasser Medical Complex, which is the most important referral hospital in southern Gaza, is partially functioning. The world body has expressed concern about reports of residential areas being ordered to evacuate around the hospital, which are extremely concerning. According to WHO reports and eyewitness accounts, when military activities intensify near the hospital, ambulances, patients, staff, and WHO and partners are unable to reach the complex. The world body has also said that it is working to strengthen and expand the existing struggling health system.
WHO will keep striving to supply health facilities in the northern Gaza, but without fuel, staff, and other essential needs medicines, medicines won't make a difference, and all patients will die slowly and painfully.
It has also expressed concern about the fresh wave of displacement of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip who have been pushed by Israel to move to further south. It says the displacement of people will further strain health facilities in the south, which are already struggling to meet the population's immense needs. The WHO statement read, "This forced mass movement of people will also lead to more overcrowding, increased risk of infectious diseases, and make it even harder to deliver humanitarian aid. Most of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are grappling with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and severe risk of disease." WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom has also repeated a call on the international community to, quote, take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza. The remarks come a day after the WHO staff went on a high-risk mission to deliver humanitarian supplies to the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza and Al-Amal Palestine Red Crescent Society in southern Gaza. Both hospitals serve as shelters for displaced Palestinians seeking safety amid relentless Israeli bombardment. At Al-Shifa Hospital, a reported 50,000 people are sheltering, while 14,000 others are at Al-Amal.
Seen children, women, young men, old men and women, people bleeding out. I, at the same time yesterday at Al-Aqsa, I saw a woman who had multiple gunshot wounds. An attempt was made to refer her, and she was referred back because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere in these hospitals at the moment. We're seeing almost only trauma cases come through the door, and at a scale that's quite difficult to believe. It's a bloodbath, as we said before. It's carnage.
They have been injured and have been in the hospital for 10 days. As soon as the Israeli troops withdrew, I rushed to take them. As you can see, They suffer from total burns for no reason. They were left with no food or water and no care. There are other injured members of my family, but I wasn't able to carry them. After I arrived at the hospital, I witnessed massive destruction, an indescribable scene. Patients are scattered in every corner, beds are overturned, and medical material are damaged.
Comments come as Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. From corpses lying unattended on the streets, to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7 are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The death toll in the coastal territory since the Israeli regime launched its indiscriminate aerial and ground attacks nearly 3 months ago is now over 21,000, most of them children and women. Almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours. The barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian facilities.
This is really the worst thing that U.S. and Israel could do to Palestinians. The genocide is the heinous war crimes are gone unnoticed.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Zionist regime's ongoing genocidal assault on Palestinian civilians in Gaza is part of a long and brutal history that goes back to 1951. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The United States, the EU, and the UK do not tire of defending the Zionist regime's genocidal war against the Palestinian people with the cliché incantation that Israel has the right to defend itself. In August 2022, the Zionist regime bombed Palestinians in Gaza over 3 days, killing 49 people, including 17 children. The U.S. and the EU's response to the massacre was to declare emphatically their support for Israel's right to defend itself and mutedly to regret the death of Palestinian civilians. That was the last major massacre the Zionist regime committed in Gaza before its current genocidal war, but it certainly was not the first. For that, we must go back to 1951. When the Zionist regime began to raid the Gaza Strip. The Zionist regime had already expelled hundreds of thousands of Palestinians to Gaza between the end of 1947 and the summer of 1950, when the remaining 2,500 Palestinians from the Mediterranean town of Majdal Asqalan were loaded on 2 trucks by the Zionist regime's army.
The fabricated regime of Israel would also expel 7,000 Palestinian Bedouins to Egypt during this period up to 1955. In October 1951, the Israelis raided Gaza, killing dozens of Palestinians and Egyptians, demolishing dozens of houses and blowing up wells to curb the attempts by the expelled Palestinians to return home across new borders erected by the Jewish settler colony. Earlier in August 1949, Israeli troops captured two Palestinian refugees. They killed the man, and 22 troops took turns raping the woman before killing her. In March 1950, the Zionist regime troops abducted two Palestinian girls and one boy from Gaza across the new border. They killed the boy and then raped the two girls before killing them. By then, it was quite common for the Zionist regime troops and police to rape female Palestinian refugees attempting to return to their homes, a practice that was widespread during the Nakba a few years earlier. In August 1950, for example, four Zionist policemen raped a Palestinian woman picking fruit from her family's orchard across the West Bank border. The Zionist regime raids on Gaza would continue in 1952 and 1953, culminating in the Boragi refugee camp massacre in August of that year. The Zionist regime's military unit 101 killed at least 20 Palestinian refugees, including 7 women and 5 children, by throwing bombs through the windows of their huts while they slept and shooting those who fled. Dozens were injured. Other sources put the final tally of Palestinians killed at 50. At the time, foreign observers did not mention the Zionist regime's right to defend itself and called the massacre an appalling case of deliberate mass murder. That same year, the Israelis slaughtered 70 Palestinian civilians in the West Bank village of Gibeah, which even the Indianapolis-based pro-Israel National Jewish Post compared to the Nazi massacre. In February 1955, the Israelis raided an Egyptian military camp in Gaza, killing at least 36 Egyptian troops and 2 Palestinian civilians, one of whom was a child. The Zionists bombed the Gaza city of Khan Yunis on November 2, 1956, from the air, killing scores of civilians before Zionist tanks entered the city on November 3. The Israelis rounded up resistance fighters and executed them on the spot or in their homes. Meanwhile, in the adjacent refugee camp, the Zionists rounded up all men and boys above the age of 15 in the town square. They proceeded to machine gun them, killing between 300 and 500 people, the vast majority of whom were civilians and half being 1948 refugees. They occupied Gaza and the Sinai Peninsula until they were forced out by the U.S. and the USSR in March 1957. In the past few weeks, the Zionist regime carried out massacres in Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, which the Zionist regime dubbed a dangerous combat zone after it had served as a safe zone for 1 million Palestinians who had fled northern Gaza. It included the slaughter of 30 civilians sheltering at a school from the Zionist regime's savage bombings. The relentless mass killing of Palestinians since October 7th makes the 1956 savage Israeli regime massacre seem humane in comparison. In 1967, The Zionist regime again invaded and occupied Gaza. It expelled 75,000 Palestinians from the Strip and prevented 50,000 more who were working, studying, or traveling outside Gaza when the Zionist regime invaded from returning home. It confiscated 60% of the land and all the water of the Palestinians, much of which was for the exclusive use of the Jewish colonists, who had access to 18 times the amount of water available to the indigenous Palestinians. The Jewish colonists had 85 more stolen land per capita than the Palestinian owners of the land. The fabricated regime of Israel subjected the entire Palestinian population to a racialized military occupation, during which it destroyed Gaza's economic infrastructure until 2005. Since the Zionist regime's redeployment around Gaza in September 2005 and its incarceration of 2.3 million Palestinians in the Gaza concentration camp, the Israelis launched numerous bombing campaigns against the camp's civilian inmates and the resistance, including in 2006, 2008 to 2009, 2012, 2014, and 2021, killing thousands of civilians. The only victory that the Zionist regime's military has scored since October 7th is the slaughter of tens of thousands of civilians, with tens of thousands more injured, and more than 2 million others displaced. It has further succeeded in the destruction of homes and residential buildings, hospitals, schools, libraries, municipal buildings, churches, and mosques. Despite all the civilian slaughter and destruction, its reputation for military preparedness has been lost for the foreseeable future. As more and more details trickle out of the Zionist regime's murder of its own civilians and destruction of their homes on October 7th, it will be a long time before it can recapture some of the fictional military allure it has previously enjoyed in the West and among its Arab allies. One of the more interesting ironies of the current Zionist regime's war is that, whereas the US empire and its EU and UK subsidiaries continue to rearm the Zionist regime since October 8, without respite so that the settler colony could continue its genocidal war, it is the Palestinian resistance that has had no weapons replenishment since that date and yet continues to score military victories against the Zionist regime's invaders. But not only have the Americans been the major party to this war against a colonized and brutalized people, Jake Sullivan, President Biden's national security advisor, went further by identifying the United States with the Zionist regime so much that he referred to the Palestinian resistance as the enemy of the United States. Given the shameless racist discourse among Zionist regime's officials about the Palestinians as animals and subhuman, the extraordinary force of the indiscriminate Israeli killing machine and the scale of the Zionist regime's genocidal atrocities, the appropriateness or inappropriateness of the analogy is up for debate. What remains beyond doubt, however, is that while the industrial scale of Israeli regime atrocities in Gaza is unprecedented, their cruel nature has been part and parcel of the Zionist regime's war on the Palestinian people since 1948.
Spotlight. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Israel is pressing ahead with its relentless aerial and ground attacks on Gaza. In the 100 days of the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide in the besieged strip, 24,000 Palestinians have been killed, mostly women and children. Schools, mosques, churches, refugee camps and hospitals are a frequent target of strikes. Half of the population are starving and millions have been displaced. This is why resistance fighters in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and other parts of the region are inflicting heavy blows on Israel, and pro-Palestinian protests around the world have not lost any momentum. Our guests for this edition of The Spotlight are Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, Zafar Bangosh, joining us from Toronto. And political commentator Shabir Rizvi, joining us from Chicago.
Is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Zafar Bangosh in Toronto. Now, the total death toll from Israel's 100 days of incessant bombing and attacks is nearing the 24,000 mark. Over 60,000 people have also been injured. Schools, mosques, churches, hospitals, ambulances, they've been a frequent target of the strikes, which have left only a handful of medical facilities partially operational. Palestinian officials say only six ambulances are still operational in the entire Gaza Strip. Only six ambulances? Please share with us your perspective on the horrors that Gazans have been enduring for 100 days.
Let me add that the total casualties are probably more than 30,000, not just 24,000, because there are approximately 7,000 people that are under rubble, that have not been dug out because there isn't any heavy machinery. And even if people go to dig these bodies out, they are attacked by Israeli snipers. So in that sense, the death toll is much higher. With respect to these horrendous casualty figures and then the death and destruction that the Zionist regime has inflicted upon the Palestinian people, it is absolutely, they are perpetrating a genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. And that's what we hear, the case that South Africa has so eloquently presented in the International Court of Justice. And Israel has trotted out all the old lies, which have no basis in fact. The fact that, you know, the Zionists have destroyed most of the 66 hospitals in Gaza. The most horrifying part of this is that there is no anesthesia. And UNICEF has reported that approximately 1,000 children have had to have their limbs amputated without anesthesia. Can you imagine the horror of that situation? And the bodies that are lying in you know, the bodies that are in the buildings, etc., stray dogs are attacking them. So this is an absolute catastrophe for the Palestinian people in Gaza that the Zionist war criminals are inflicting upon them. But the Zionists are not succeeding in their military mission, and that is to wipe out Hamas. Fighting is still going on. Hamas is still confronting the Zionist war criminals and still inflicting casualties upon them. So in that sense, Israel's actual military and political objectives have failed.
Shavi Rizvi, since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, the Israeli regime has sought to dismantle the resistance groups there. After 100 days of lethal and deadly attacks, Palestinian resistance groups are fighting back, strong both inside and outside of Gaza. Those were statements that were echoed by the spokesperson of the Al-Qassam Brigades, Abu Obaida, who we were listening to just a little earlier. The Al-Qassam Brigades, they've released footage of attacks on invading Israeli troops and military vehicles in Khan Yunis. Al-Quds Brigade said it targeted several Israeli settlements. So that means that the Israelis have not achieved their military objectives. Even the Israelis are admitting this. So other than becoming record holders for murdering children, what have the Israelis achieved?
Yes, thank you for having me. In the 100 days of this genocidal massacre that's been, you know, forced upon the Palestinians, what we've seen is a total failure of the Zionist entity. This is from the military perspective, in which they've had multiple brigades retreat, including the Golani Brigade, which is one of their most infamous brigades. It's been in operation since 1948. We see new videos of Israeli troops being confronted point blank every day, released by the Al-Qassam Brigades. There's reportedly over 4,000 permanently disabled Israeli troops, and this is just the military component. We also have to examine the economic component, where the Israeli economy is basically plummeting day after day to the tune of millions of dollars. The port of Eilat, which has been targeted by various resistance forces, including the Iraqi resistance, now being able to reach that far is quite a feat of its own, has shut down the port entirely. It's down 85%. And then to the north, you have Hezbollah clearing out entire settlements, which is also drastically not only impacting the economy, but the actual morale of Israeli settlers. They do not feel safe there. They have evacuated. And over a quarter million alone have been evacuated from the north. Of course, they're going to, dilute these numbers of how many people actually left, how many settlers actually left occupied Palestine since October 7th. But all this to say, they have a diminishing, diminishing workforce and economy. And lastly, very lastly, politically, they're facing international condemnation. They're being taken to court on the charges of genocide, and whether those charges stick or not, that's yet to be determined. But the fact is, they were taken to court. They have international condemnation. They have millions of people across the West marching against them. So the entire view of how Israel has carefully created itself over the years is now being exposed, and they are very much facing an existential crisis.
Zafar Bangosh, the Hamas representative in Lebanon, says that Israel has failed to achieve any of its objectives despite this genocide, a war that's something we've been discussing with you and our guest in Chicago. Osama Hamdan said Israel has failed to break the determination of the resistance of Palestinians. Also earlier today, Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah described the Gazans' resistance as legendary. Now, resistance has been described as the only viable option for Palestinians. In spite of all the efforts to weaken it, why is the resistance front still thriving, not just in Palestine, but also in the region as a whole?
First of all, let's look at the resistance inside Palestine. They have endured 75 years of Zionist brutality, and they've had enough of it. They're simply not prepared to put up with this anymore, and they are prepared to make any sacrifice and every sacrifice in order to achieve their freedom from the Zionist occupiers. The reason that the Zionists have failed in Gaza is that over the years, the Palestinian resistance there has dug hundreds of miles of tunnels. And in fact, even the Israeli defense minister in the war cabinet, Yoav Gallant, admitted a few days ago that the Israeli army has achieved its control in northern Gaza, but on the ground. And of course, he basically was referring that underground, Hamas is still going strong. And this is, in fact, a brilliant strategy that Hamas adopted in order to dig these hundreds of miles of tunnels. And any time that the Israeli army has tried to penetrate those tunnels, they've been blown up, and the Israelis have suffered massive casualties. So in the sense of the resistance having been able to withstand all of this Zionist onslaught, despite the fact that the Israeli army is the most heavily armed army in the entire region, indicates that the resistance is totally determined. A fundamental factor of their determination is that it's not only the fact that they are on the right side of history, but the fact that they are motivated by Islamic principles, and they consider death to be martyrdom, and they welcome it. Whereas the Zionist thugs want to live in this world, they are terrified of dying. And so in that sense, the psychological makeup of the resistance vis-a-vis the Zionist army is also extremely important to take into consideration. Now, you mentioned about the external factor. Of course, you know, as Shabir mentioned, the Iraqi resistance firing missiles at Haifa and shutting it down. We also need to take into account the brilliant operations of Ansarullah in Yemen, who have actually targeted Israeli-bound ships and Israeli-owned ships. And even though the United States and Britain have entered the fray, entered the war on behalf of the Zionists, I mean, they are supplying them weapons and providing them diplomatic cover and so on, and now they're militarily involved in it. But the Americans will also face that defeat, because Ansarullah cannot be defeated. They have this experience for 7 years fighting against the Saudi and Emirati aggressors, and they have shown that they have the determination and the will to confront this. So in that sense, even though, can you imagine that, you know, Americans keep on saying that we don't want the war to be to spread in the region, and yet they're directly involved militarily in spreading the war. And so in that sense, I think the effort by the Ansarullah is a very important component, and it has cost the Zionists enormously in terms of losses in terms of trade.
Shabi Rizvi, the issue of Yemen has come up now. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah said that the U.S. and the U.K. are committing stupidity in the Red Sea in support of the apartheid regime of Israel. Now, was the attack on Yemen even more of a revelation that the U.S. fully supports the massacre in Gaza?
Absolutely. The United States is the direct player in this genocide. And I think it also goes to show that not only is Israel on trial internationally here, I think it's a trial of this so-called rules-based order that the United States tends to impose on all the countries around it, but itself refuses to follow. And I think you can also kind of see the UNSC kind of bear some responsibility here. We're 100 days in. There's been countless times where the UNSC has been called to, you know, reach a ceasefire resolution. They aren't able to protect the lives of 2.3 million Palestinians. But what the UNSC can do at the behest of the United States is protect protect the Israeli economy, essentially. They passed the resolution condemning Ansarullah, condemning Yemen. And I know that Russia and China were both kind of, they didn't vote for it. They abstained. But it just goes to show that these international mechanisms are built for the United States ruling class. They're built to impose United States rule, and they won't actually act fairly. They won't actually be used to prevent any sort of massacre. The United States and the UK entering this is specifically showing not only are they only interested in preserving the Israel itself, which seems to be dwindling hour after hour, but they're only motivated by profiteering for their capitalist class. The Joe Biden administration specifically stated shipping delays as being the reason why they intervene. Now, we know that's only part of it, but they are a main player in this, and they are attacking Yemen, who is who's acting on behalf of the Genocide Convention, saying if you have the ability to stop a genocide, you have to do it. And the United States going against this clearly shows that they are, you know, the main players in the genocide. They're stopping the one country that's being able to, cripple the Israeli economy, and then they're arming the country that's actually, causing this genocide while backing them completely politically. So the United States here is the key player. If there wasn't a United States, there wouldn't be an Israel.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines. featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Zafar Ben-Gosh, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is coming under more pressure to step down amid the mounting criticism over his handling of the Gaza war. Thousands of Israelis have once again taken to the streets in Tel Aviv to slam Netanyahu for his failures in Gaza. And also earlier today, Hezbollah's Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said that the Israeli public opinion will no longer support this genocidal war on Gaza. This is all but the end for Benjamin Netanyahu, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because Netanyahu knows that at the moment this war stops, he's going to go straight to prison. I mean, he was already facing criminal charges, and now he's being held responsible for not protecting the Israeli citizens because of Hamas's brilliant operation that was launched on October the 7th. Secondly, there are hundreds of Israeli prisoners that Hamas is holding, many of them military personnel, and their families are clamoring to get them out of captivity. Now, it's incredible to see that, you know, we need to keep in mind that Hamas and the Islamic resistance in Gaza has been treating these prisoners extremely humanely. These prisoners themselves, in their own interviews after they were released, have admitted that they were treated humanely and very nicely. Whereas the Zionists, who have taken thousands of Palestinians hostages before, you know, the escalation of activities, there are probably something like 7,000 Palestinian prisoners. And since then, Israel has taken many more thousands from the West Bank. So altogether, there are probably something like 10,000 Palestinians that are languishing in Israeli prisons that are being tortured, humiliated. Some prisoners have been killed. So you can see the contrast between how the Palestinians are treating Israeli prisoners and how the Israelis are treating Palestinian prisoners. The Palestinian prisoners have actually been kidnapped from their homes. So in that sense, internally, there is a lot of pressure on Netanyahu because the families of these Israeli prisoners are demanding that Netanyahu take steps in order to get them out and to whatever concessions need to be made that he ought to make them. But as we know, the moment this war stops, there is a ceasefire, Netanyahu will definitely go to prison because there are a lot of people that are holding him responsible. In fact, you know, there was a survey done in which I think only 15% of the people support what Netanyahu has done. The rest are all opposed to him. So that gives us an indication.
Shabir Rizvi, talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, in a defiant statement earlier, he said that nothing can stop us, not even The Hague and not anybody else. What are your thoughts about that tone? It does sound like a maniacal war criminal who's not satisfied with the death of 10,000 innocent children.
Definitely. I mean, if I was a South African attorney, I'd be looking at these tweets and taking more notes. I mean, we see very clearly from the very start of this operation, and actually just even years prior, Benjamin Netanyahu is Israel. Whatever Israel claims, whatever their so-called opposition party claims that this isn't Israel, it's a complete lie. Benjamin Netanyahu is the face of what Israeli policies are. He's the face of the Israeli experiment, and he is out here specifically making these genocidal statements. He's telling you exactly who he is. And to go back to, you know, the charges at The Hague, if the charges of The Hague don't stick, when this man is clearly saying this, then I think that we need to kind of abandon looking at the ICJ and all these international appendages altogether, because the most important thing that you have to understand about this trial is intent. You can kill a million people, but if an attorney can't prove that you had the intent, then the genocidal charges won't stick. But Benjamin Netanyahu and his entire cabinet are out here telling you that they want to wipe out Palestinians from Gaza, that they want to expel them, that they want to destroy them and their families. the intent is clearly there. And these are blatantly genocidal intentions that he is airing out for the world to see. And I think this is a result of decades-long Israeli comfort that the United States will back them no matter what horrendous evil thing they do. The Israelis are now seeing that they have an international scope on them that's more critical than it's ever been. And instead of kind of, you know, walking it back, the only way that they see this is the only way that they see out is to go through with it, is to plant their feet down and stand their ground and say, yes, we are committing genocide. What are you going to do about it, without actually fragrantly saying that? And I think this is going to be a test of all of these different international institutions of whether they can intervene in the moment and actually do what needs to be done in order to stop a massacre from happening that's being displayed before our very eyes day after day.
Zafar Bangash, tens of thousands have gathered in central London recently in front of the parliament, voicing their support for Gaza. And similar pro-Palestine rallies were held in Indonesia, South Korea, Italy, among other countries. These demonstrations have been ongoing since the start of the Israeli onslaught. Is this the most isolated Israel has ever been because of this genocidal war?
As far as international public opinion is concerned, that's definitely the conclusion that we can draw. I mean, there have been literally hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating all over the world, including in the United States, in Canada, Britain, France. In fact, all of these regimes are dead against the Palestinian people. They are even actually criminalizing these protests, and yet people are defying them. So at the level of public opinion, definitely yes. What is obviously very disturbing is that these Western regimes, whether it's the United States, Britain, Germany, Canada, France, all of these regimes, they are backing the Zionist war criminals because they are their own kith and kin. I mean, we must understand that Israel is an illegitimate entity thrust into the heartland of Islam. This is a colonial settler entity that has been thrust there, and the Zionist rulers, whether it's the military or the politicians, are actually from the West. They don't belong to that land. And so this settler colonial entity, an illegitimate entity, has to be demolished. Only then we will have peace there. And as Shabir said, I don't think that these so-called international organizations are going to do it. I think the only solution is that the resistance front and other organizations must become more actively involved to put an end to this cancer that is in the heartland of the Muslim world.
And Shabir Rizvi, final thoughts from you as well. Is this the most isolated Israel has ever been?
Yes, I believe this is an existential crisis that if it doesn't finish off Israel by the end of this era here, by the end of this Palestinian operation, then it's definitely created a domino effect where I don't think Israel is going to survive the next decade. In fact, I don't think it's going to survive the 20s. They have proven that they are only reliant on the U.S. taxpayer in order to barely stand on their two feet. We have seen that, you know, 100 days in, just an hour ago, Palestinian resistance is still able to launch rockets into Tel Aviv. We have seen the internal crisis of Israel itself, where they're seeing, you know, demonstrations. Of course, it's settler on settler violence is what I call it. But as you can see, that they're against their own presidency right now,